safe contemporary theological title to show you that we can have brilliant results while avoiding fragility in both the cases. So just a very little presentation of my hospital, which is a rehabilitation hospital, and we take care of almost about 300 patients with neurologic condition every day. We have, for instance, a Catholic school with hundreds of children who have also neurologic conditions. My function in this hospital is to manage the center for home and care ventilation, where we have almost 200 patients with ventilation at home. And we started in 1992 with our center for mechanical ventilation. So I told you that very often Duchenne dystrophy is very interesting to compare with other disorders because it has a very stereotyped evolution. And this evolution is like, it's like this. You see with age, it's increasing, then there is a maximum point, and after that it's decreasing. In general, we can consider as long as there is a period of increasing breathing capacity that we can measure, this is the vital capacity, this is the amount of volume we can breathe in and out, as long as it's increasing, there is no risk for the respiration, absolutely no risk. The problem starts when it's declining, and we must expect that at one moment of the declining progression of the vital capacity, the breathing capacity, that patients will develop what we call restrictive respiratory insufficiency. This means that at one moment they will begin to suffocate and not be able more to breathe normally without a device to help them to breathe in and out. So when we look at the evolution of vital capacity in these patients, this is the same as the previous one. You see progression, the maximum point and the decreasing vital capacity. We can expect that at one moment, patients will need ventilation for the ninth time. And we made a study on a large cohort of patients, and we could statistically suggest that when patients have a vital capacity less than 1.8 liters, a little bit less than 2 liters of breathing capacity, vital capacity, the risk for needing ventilation at nine is very high. And later in the disease progression, later when they are older, someday they will also need to have the extension of the nocturnal ventilation into the daytime. And again, we made statistics and we could suggest criteria value of a little bit less than 0.7 liters, a little bit less than 1 liter, and when patients reach a little bit less than 700 milliliters, then
recorder?
It's just before the speech.
Ah, sorry, I thought it was the pointer. Perhaps I stopped it. So, I've check it because I'm not sure that I didn't stop it.
It's recording.
It's recording.
Thank you.
Okay. So, for the statistic, we know if they have less than 0.680 liters, the risk for needing ventilation also during the daytime is very high. So I already showed you the same slide with a patient not sleeping and afterwards sleeping. And you see when the patient is not sleeping, the oxygen saturation is quite good and CO2 is quite good. It means that the patient is breathing quite normally. But during sleep, it can be worsening. And you see clearly that both oxygen level here, but also the level of CO2 will be changed in bad values. So a low O2 saturation and high CO2, more than 47 millimeters of mercury. And so how can we measure that? It's very simple. Now there are very simple systems to measure that with only an ear clip. And with this ear clip, we are able to measure O2 saturation, level of oxygen, but also the amount of CO2 patients are exhaling. I showed you already the same slides. So you see clearly here a patient with problems of oxygen saturation, and the same patients receiving ventilation, you see that it's perfectly corrected. The same with CO2, it's too high, and as soon as we start with ventilation, the CO2 has 10 points lower, so it's under control thanks to this kind of ventilation at night. I spoke until now about Duchenne dystrophy, but the first slide of the previous presentation showed you that there are many, many, many different forms, at least 600 different forms. And so some infants can be affected by severe forms of neuromuscular dystrophies, and they may be completely dependent of the ventilator from birth. And this is the case of some type 1 or type 2 SMA, spinal muscular atrophy patients, or patients with congenital myopathies. And this is a child with a congenital myopathy that only could be ventilated on the side, because this child, when she was lying on her back, she was suffocating immediately. But also, as you can see here, she couldn't manage her saliva. And so the only way to have expulsion of saliva was to put the child on the side. And we developed simple things to make that she could draw, for instance, with a system to hold her arm, because she was totally paralyzed. Nocturnal ventilation, when does it start? It starts as soon as we can measure what we call hypercapnia. And hypercapnia is a level of CO2 higher than 47 millimeters of mercury. In general, pressure cycle ventilation with guaranteed volume are ideal to ventilate those patients, a little bit everywhere now. And when we ask patients what are their preferred interface for nighttime ventilation, they say, I prefer the nasal mask. So it's the most common used interface for the nighttime. It's only the nasal mask. For the daytime, it's a little bit different. And we recommend to start ventilation during the daytime as soon as patients have daytime dyspnea. Dyspnea means that patients complain about difficult breathing. They say, oof, I feel that it's difficult. When patients say that they feel it's difficult, it's the right time to begin with daytime ventilation. And it's not just an idea. We made a very physiological study on that we published in, I think, important journal in the Thorax, and where we measured 18 different parameters, and we looked at the relationship between what the patients say, I feel it's difficult to breathe, with objective parameters measuring that the load on the muscles, that the work of breathing indeed was high. And we could make a good parallel in the changes in dyspnea and in the changes in the work of breathing. And so for this reason, we know that patients that are complaining about difficult breathing, it means really that they are difficult breathing. It's not like this. It's really difficult for them. And so in addition to that, they will have additional symptoms. I will speak about these additional symptoms. But for the technical ventilation, we prefer the volume cycle ventilators instead of the pressure cycle. And when we speak with all the centers, there are mostly perhaps 10 big centers in the world with a good experience in mouthpiece ventilation. They all of them use volume cycle. I do not know one center with expertise only using pressure cycle. It doesn't exist. And there are technical reasons for that. Perhaps we can speak about that in the discussion for those who are interested in these specific information. Regarding the interface, patients also prefer a mouthpiece instead of the nasal mask and instead of the tracheostomy, for sure. This is a survey made on more than 100 patients in France, and they looked at the mode of ventilation. This is a little bit technical, but it's interesting to see that with increasing dependence on the ventilator, you see here a patient using less than 8 hours, between 8 and 12, between 12 and 20, and more than 20 hours a day, you see clearly that for the night time, the pressure cycle are the most used. So what is a pressure cycle mode? It means that on the device you will set a pressure. It's what you will set on the device. But also you see clearly that with increasing dependence, there are more and more ventilated, you see that the gray column is lower and lower. So it means with dependence on the ventilator, the pressure cycle ventilators are less and less used, while the volume cycle, this is the white column, clearly is the most used in those patients using a lot of ventilation on 24 hours. And it's in this study, more than 90% of patients in France already using the mouthpiece when they are night and day ventilated for the daytime. Yeah. And for the nighttime, they still use their nasal mask. There are four main effects of ventilation. First impact is on blood gas. Second effect is on survival. The third one is on quality of life. And finally, on sleep quality. And so I already told you, remember this slide, you clearly see better O2 saturation and also a decreasing level of CO2 with ventilation. If we look now at historical studies, and it goes here on Duchenne dystrophy, and when you see the level of CO2 before ventilation, you see levels that are higher than 47 millimeters of mercury. And after implementing ventilation, you see the level of CO2 is every time lower, showing clearly that ventilation is an effective treatment. Regarding survival, I spoke about that in the first presentation. Non-invasive ventilation is generally considered to provide an additional life expectancy of 5 to 15 years. It's important. We in Inkerdal, in our group, we have a mean survival with Duchenne of 34 years of age. And Köhler in Switzerland found that the estimated probability of survival to age 30 years was 85% with ventilation at night, and the median survival was 35 years of age. So you see, we have incredible good results in terms of survival in Duchenne dystrophy. The pity is that we have very few information in surviving in other disorders, in Steinert, SMA, etc. We do not have that. This is just a tip to tell you that it's important, it's coming from our experience. The ideal position to receive ventilation is on the side, not on the back. What we see when patients are on the back and when they are getting older, they have more and more upper airway obstruction that we can very difficultly improve with ventilation. It's very hard to improve patients who have obstructions in the upper airways. But when patients are lying on the side, they have much less obstruction because the tongue and all the muscles are placed in a better position, and it's the reason why this position is ideal for neuromuscular patients. is also the reason why we suggest to all families to say to their children to start at young ages with ventilation on the side. Because when you have patients older than 30 years of age and they have slept their whole life on their back and they will start on the side, it's very, very difficult. It's not impossible, but it's very difficult. So, a good advice is to start immediately on the side. A second tip is that we need techniques of airway clearance. And there are several techniques. There are manual techniques. There are mechanical techniques. This is the cup assist I spoke to you about. This is just a manual thrust on the thorax and the chest. Well, and here you see another device. This is the impulsator. It's intrapulmonary percussive ventilation. To give you an idea, we have almost 100 patients using this machine at home, and we have 120 patients using this machine at home. Also, we need to have adapted pillows and alternating mattress. In our experience, we have 95% of our adult patients with neuromuscular disorder who are using specific mattress, and there are many, many, many different. So it can improve comfort of sleep incredibly. So I told you it will improve survival, it will improve blood gas, but also it will improve the quality of life. This is a patient who went on Belgian television. His name is Jonathan, and I took pictures of the emission on TV, on the TV program, and here is just going to the movies. It's not because you are receiving ventilation that you must stop activities. It's totally different. With ventilation, you can do everything. And for instance, it was an interview, and you clearly see that Jonathan here can perfectly speak with his ventilation. So he's releasing the mouthpiece, taking it to be ventilated, and he can manage to speak and to be ventilated. Yeah, quality of sleep. I have no slide showing the improvement of quality of sleep. This, all the steps of sleep are ranged into different categories, and specialists in sleep say that thanks to ventilation, patients also will have a better sleep quality. It's not always the case, but in many cases it's improving quality of sleep. One of those reported experience from the parents is that they say before the ventilation I had to wake up 10 times during the night, and after it's only 2 or 3 times. Sometimes it's finished. They can sleep the whole night. I will speak now a little bit more about mouthpiece ventilation, because nasal mask ventilation is made everywhere, but ventilation with the mouthpiece is not so common. Even now it's improving, it's increasing everywhere. And you must know that every company, Weinmann, ResMed, Philips, all companies are developing their own system with accessories dedicated to ventilation with the mouthpiece. So it's now increasing a lot in the past years. Just to show you some of our patients using the technique, you see, all these patients are using the mouthpiece. They have no tracheostomy, they have no nasal mask during the daytime. But as you can see, they all have different systems. Not every patient will use the straw. Not every patient will use the angle mouthpiece. And it's the reason why we give the opportunity to patients to try everything. I will speak about that a little bit later. We started with ventilation with the mouthpiece already in 1992. The indication of ventilation was from the American Thoracic Society, published in 2004, that we may give ventilation, like for Martin, with the mouthpiece during the daytime, only when patients have a high CO2. This is called hypercapnia. This is what we made in a study reported already 10 years ago, and we indeed looked at 42 patients with Duchenne dystrophy, where we found indeed that during the daytime they had a high CO2. Some of them had a quite good CO2, but those patients were so much complaining that we already decided to start with mouthpiece ventilation in the daytime. But what was interesting in this group, before starting with mouthpiece ventilation, is that they were close to all dyspneic. Dyspneic means that they complain about difficult breathing. They said, for me, it's difficult to breathe in and out. 95% of them. And as you can see, after implementing ventilation, the big majority of them were improved with their CO2. What are the symptoms that you must look at as parents, but also as professional, in patients already using ventilation at night, but who complain during the daytime? Nocturnal ventilation will be good for several years, but after 4 or 5 years for Duchenne, for instance, after that they will progressively complain during the daytime. This is dyspnea. But other typical complaints are anorexia and loss of appetite. And the mother of Martin told me yesterday that Martin, after starting mouthpiece, took 10 kilos. 10 kilos! It's incredible. And perhaps I'm not sure about his weight, perhaps he's 25, so it means 25 plus 10 kilos, it's 35. It's a lot. It's 20-25% increasing. So, anorexia and loss of appetite. And this is what we typically see in our patients. When they have complained during the daytime, you give ventilation, they will speak better. That's sure. They will have a better CO2, but for sure they will have a better appetite. They will eat better. Also, they will typically say that they have few energy. One of the things you can measure is just to ask them, how many hours are you sitting in the wheelchair? Perhaps they will sit 4 hours, 6 hours. With ventilation, they will again sit the whole day. This is very typical. They will recover energy with ventilation. And a last point, and this is more for professionals, for doctors and physiotherapists, we also saw that patients with dyspnea, anorexia and loss of energy typically had a sudden drop in vital capacity of more than 10%, sometimes in some months. So someone who is showing a so severe drop of his breathing capacity when you measure that is, it's not normal. It makes sense. It makes sense. So I told you, dyspnea can be very easily measured. So this is the typical scale. This is called the Borg scale. And patients have to say from 0 to 10 how they breathe today. If they say 0 means that it's very easy. When they say 10, it means that they are suffocating. And we could, in this study, we could show that patients telling that they have more than 3 on this scale, they have a too high worker breathing and they will benefit from daytime ventilation. So this is our criteria. A Borg score higher than 3 on 10 already means in the daytime that they will benefit from a ventilation. This is a recent study we have made, and it's not published yet, so I will try to publish that end of this year. And we made a study on 20 patients with mouthpiece ventilation. The first part of the slide shows you what were the results on the CO2. And you see, every number is one patient, you have 20 patients. You clearly see that most of them have dramatic drop in CO2. So the technique works very good. So, when people tell me, I do not like mouthpiece because it doesn't work, yeah, it works. Even the problem is some if some patient it's, that it's working too good, and that patient have sometimes too low CO2. So it's working very well. Second point, and this is the upper part of the slide you see here, you see what they call their dyspnea. This is the score on 10 points. And as you can see, again, 20 patients, they were scoring high, and after mouthpiece ventilation, look, they score very low. It means that their comfort to breathe with mouthpiece is also very good. Without exception, it's 20 on 20. This slide is more for the technicians than for the parents and for the patients, perhaps. But when we look at the titration of the device, it means how will we set the parameters. In general, we try to work with a volume assist control mode. So it means that we will set a volume in the machine with no leak compensation. This is very important. We have seen in the previous study that when patients can have a choice to their rate, to their frequency, they are choosing for 4 points lower than the rate at night. So, to give you an example, a patient who has a frequency, a rate at 20 at night, will have probably the right rate at 16 during the daytime. So the rate is very often lower. How do we know that? It's just because when we try with the trilogy, with a frequency at zero, I'm sorry, it's a little bit technical, but the technicians will understand what I'm speaking about. When we set at zero, we see that patients are triggering with 16 and not at 20, not at the same rate as for the night time. This is interesting. So the rate a little bit lower. The volume will be almost the same as the volume at night. In our population, we have for adults almost an average of 600 milliliters, and for the children between 300 and 400 milliliters. Importantly, for neuromuscular patients, no EPAP. So it means that you must have the possibility on the device to put the expiratory pressure at zero. Okay. Last point is that if you can fix the inspiration time, it's a good idea, and in our experience, the average inspiratory time is 1.3 seconds. So you see here the same patient as before, Jonathan, who was on TV, you remember him. You see his tubing, this is the straw, but also you can see here that he has a very long tube. So a question that that I often have is it normal that the patient has a so long tube? Is it not a risk that he will rebreathe his own CO2? If you are afraid that it will happen, just look at what the patient is doing. Neuromuscular patients very often take it and release it, or they are making leaks around the lips. And so the risk for rebreathing the CO2 is very low. But I have already heard experiences from in France, in Italy, but also in Canada, in ALS patients who were taking the mouthpiece very closely without doing leaks. If it's the case, perhaps you must have here a system of leaks to make that there is a possibility to exhale CO2. In my experience, I never met that, but it can happen. So if you are titrating the machine for a new patient, just look at what the patient is doing. For instance, if you look at Martin, he's doing a lot of leaks. So it's not so much a danger, but just pay attention. So with such a system, you must first insert a tube in the support. After that, you will try to find the appropriate place of this support on the device. And for me, the best way to know how to place the arm support is to ask the patient. So easy. Because they know. They know perfectly well if they prefer to have the mouthpiece coming from here, coming from there, coming from here, on the side, on the other side, etc. Patients know. For instance, for him, he preferred to have the arm support very close to his thorax. Why not? And so I tried to put, indeed for him, to customize the position of the arm support. Then, when the arm support is on the right place, you must find the right place to fix the grip of the tube. Then you will place the arm support to make that the mouthpiece will come close to the lips of the patient. You can remove items if necessary, and it's something I will try to make with Martin, is to remove perhaps half of his system. You see, his system is very long, and perhaps we should make it shorter. So I will try perhaps this afternoon or tomorrow to shorten a little bit the arm. And it's possible to remove items of the arm support. In this patient, we made something special. He didn't like to have the big straw like the one of Martin, and so I took a very classical tube, like the tube for PAP in the tubings. The technicians know what it is. I just cut it. I wound it up. I was too quick. I wound it up. And so, with warming the silicone, I could make an elbow to make that the mouthpiece is coming directly in his mouth. So you can customize everything. Yeah, it's. Am I coming backwards? No? Yes, that's strange. Okay. So hide the tubing. Very often patients like to be clever, to be smart, to have no tubing that people can see. They love discretion in general. They love that. So connect the tubing. You start the ventilator, and patient is ready to start with his device on his back. So many devices now for mouthpiece ventilation have their own carrying back that you can attach on the back of the wheelchair. And very often too, these bags include external batteries to make that it makes a unit of ventilation. And with such a system, this one, you can hold 8 hours, but there are other devices with whom you can hold 12, 16 hours with batteries. What is the best choice of the ventilator? Which ventilator will you choose? We prefer the volume cycle with no leak compensation. It's preferable to have no PEEP to suppress the expiratory PAP, and also to have a guaranteed volume. We also prefer to have a fixed inspiratory time. Importantly, we must have good internal batteries inside in the machine, but also friendly use external batteries. It must be very easy for families to use it. That's important. For us, it's very important. When you ask patients what is their favorite mouthpiece, do they prefer the angle mouthpiece or do they prefer the straw? Almost 50% will prefer the straw, and 50% will prefer the plastic mouthpiece from Philips Respironics. For this reason, we offer to every patient to try the two solutions. So during the learning process, we give them a straw, we give them the plastic piece, and they have the choice for one or another interface. The same for the system, the support of the tubing. You can use a system that is available by a company. And for instance, also now ResMed has made his own arm support, so there are no alternatives to the Philips arm support, but this one is very good. What we are doing is to customize by ourselves. So we are doing, with our occupational therapist, we are doing our own support. The advantage of this support we are doing by ourselves is that it's fixed on the shoulders, and when it's fixed on the shoulder, it makes that when patients are moving, all the system is coming with them. With such a system, because it's fixed on the wheelchair, if the patient is moving, the mouthpiece will not accompany the patient with his ventilation. Is there still a place for nasal mass ventilation during the daytime? We believe that it's important to give both possibilities, because we saw with our experience that many patients prefer the nasal mask in unstable conditions, like during traveling. You see here a patient in a plane. When they are outside, during infections, they prefer the nasal mask. They find it's more effective. During medical interventions, such as the placement of the tube here in the stomach, but also in those patients with severe bulbar weakness. So patients who have severe problems to swallow. And you saw a patient in the plane, his name is Tai. You see the same patient now in Marrakesh. He's in Marrakesh. This is the market of Marrakesh. He's at the restaurant. And he has a friend with another disorder. He's an adult with type 2 SMA. And they are with the parents, and they enjoy. And here he's in stable condition, so he prefers to use his mouthpiece. Here is just to show you that the same patient can use both interfaces. Here, for instance, when he's going to travel outside, I could see Martin yesterday that it was not so easy when you are outside because the mouthpiece is moving a lot. But with the nasal mask, it will not move. And so it can be much more comfortable when you go outside to prepare the nasal mask. But in stable condition inside, he prefers the mouthpiece. I will give now some examples, so you become to be tired after so many blah 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 from me. So I will show you some cases of patients. So here is a patient I like so much. Her name is Ayşe, it's a Turkish name. She's 17 years of age, but she looks like a child of 6 years of age. She's 16 kilograms, so very, very little. And as you can see, she's so little that the arm support looks very big as compared to her body. And it was a very, very difficult patient to implement nasal ventilation. But to start with mouthpiece ventilation, it went very quickly. In 2 hours, she could understand how to use the mouthpiece. As you can see here, she understood very well how to take the mouthpiece and how to release it and to take it back again. Again here, the large straw like Martin has was too big for her, and so we again take a little tube in silicone and replace it to her, and it works very good too. I already spoke about Antoine, but here is Antoine again. You saw him in the mountains. Here is in Corsica, and you see again his ventilator is here, and you see unstable conditions, but even on the water, that's incredible. They can live with ventilator. They can have a good quality of life. But clearly, it's Antoine, who is now 27. He's an accountant, so he's working. I didn't show you, but he's 30 years of age. Sorry, he's older than I thought. He's working in a company as an accountant, but here he's in vacation with his family. This is another patient who has a congenital myopathy, Jules. He's 24 years of age. This is the terrace of his apartment in Brussels. And here is his garden. And so he's fanatic of those kinds of machines, of drones. And so now he made his license to be a pilot officially, because now in Belgium we must have a license of pilot to come to drive that, and he made that. And it's very funny to see that. This is another slide showing you patients playing hockey for disabled people, and you can see here a patient with the mouthpiece. Here you see another one with tracheostomy. So you see everything is possible even in sport for disabled people. Belgium is second in the world ranking after Japan. Now I will show you some cases where patients used mouthpiece ventilation and where the community believes that it's not possible. The first case is patient with a big tongue. You perhaps know that patients with Duchenne dystrophy, very often they have a very, very big tongue here. And so when you ask to the scientific community, is it possible to use the mouthpiece with the big tongue, macroglossia, many people will say no, it's not possible, because they must have a good opening of the mouth. But it's not a problem, they will manage. We have made that with many, many patients. And I think even we never had a problem once with a patient with macroglossia. A second case is with children. We believe that from the age between 5 and 7 years of age that you can use the mouthpiece. Here it's a patient, we went to extubate him in another hospital, then he came to our hospital, and because he couldn't immediately sit in the wheelchair, we started already to accustomize him with the mouthpiece in bed, and some days later we could install everything on his wheelchair. This is a very challenging patient, Adlan. Adlan is coming, he's a refugee from Chechnya, and so when he came to Belgium, we couldn't speak at all with him, and so we had to provide surgery of the spine. He had a very severe scoliosis, and he had that. Also, we had to implement nasal ventilation, and you can see here that he has nasal ventilation because he was hurt. That's not normal, but he was hurt with his nasal mask. And during the daytime, he's using the mouthpiece. And it's just to show you someone with whom you cannot communicate. And in addition, Adlan has mental retardation, so he's not intelligent. And even a patient who is not intelligent can use such interfaces as mouthpiece. Another interesting patient, this is Thomas. Thomas has Duchenne dystrophy, he is 30 years of age, and he already started with ventilation when he was 15, because he is one of the most severe Duchenne patients I ever saw. He has already severe dysphagia. He couldn't swallow when he was 18 already. So he has already the catheter in his stomach when he was 18. And still now, 12 years later, he still is able to use the mouthpiece. Even he cannot swallow. So in patients who cannot swallow, do not immediately say it's not possible. I have a colleague, Dr. Mark Kim from Toronto, who is specialized in ALS patients. ALS patients typically have bulbar problems. And he told me, we always, for the daytime, try with the mouthpiece. When there is a failure of mouthpiece, we try with the nasal mask. When there is a failure with nasal mask, when we propose tracheostomy. This is what we propose to patients. But to him, I'm quite sure he will never have a tracheostomy. Never. Again, this is Aisha, just to show you that it's possible to have ventilation 24 hours on 24. Again, look at this child. She's 17. She cannot swallow properly, and she needs additional feeding with her nose, because she doesn't want to have the catheter in her stomach. And so it means that even if she has difficulties to swallow, she can use the mouthpiece. This is, I think, an interesting slide. So I will try to show you properly what happens on this slide. So we take a volume cycle volume to give to a patient with mouthpiece, and we set 500 milliliters, rate 15 a minute, and the mode will be volume control, as I told you before. And we will look at the patient during a period of 20 seconds. What you can see is that the machine will give the air always on the same way, because you have always the same volume, the same rate, and the device will control the volume. So the volume that is given by the machine is always the same. But the management of the patient will not be the same. For instance, and it's an example, it can be that Aisha will take the full air for one time. And after that, perhaps the second volume, she only will take 50% of the volume. And the rest will go away with leaks. After that, perhaps the next tidal volume given by the device, she will take nothing. She will release completely. For instance, to speak or to swallow, for instance. Then after, for instance, she will take 60% of the volume. Then 30%, and perhaps next time she will take the full tidal volume. So what is the message of that? The message is that patients are managing their own leaks. It's the reason why you cannot use a device that compensates for leaks. Because if so, the device will give perhaps 3 liters of air, even if the patients decided to not take air. So use a volume control, giving always the same volume, and patients will very easily understand what are their needs, and they will manage what they are taking as air. As I could show you, the CO2 will be lower, and also the comfort of ventilation will be lower. So they know what they do. Trust them. Okay, the last two slides I will see with you. The frequently asked questions about mouthpiece ventilation. The first one is, can we use the mouthpiece with dysphagic patients? Dysphagic means with swallowing problems. The answer is, perhaps, but for sure, try it. And if it doesn't work, then try the nasal mask. How long lasts the education of patients and family? It's very short. We have an average of education of 2 hours only. So it's very quick then, very quick then. Is the Philips arm compatible with all devices? So can this arm support be used with different devices? The answer is yes. It's just a problem of connections. Oh, sorry. Next question is, must patient breathe out through the mouthpiece? They have the mouthpiece. Is it necessary to breathe out through the mouthpiece? The answer is no. Even it's preferable to not do. Next question. May the circuit be long beyond the exhalation valve? Is there a risk for CO2 rebreathing? There is a very low risk. And if you see, as I already told you, that the patient is managing his leaks, there is absolutely not any risk. What we are doing in my hospital is, for 30 minutes, we are measuring CO2 to be sure that the patient has no high CO2. And so we are sure. Will patients be quickly dependent after starting the mouthpiece ventilation? Many patients believe that when they start with daytime ventilation, after some weeks, they will need to use it constantly, permanently. But it's not the case. Even it's the opposite. If you wait too late before offering ventilation, they will be quickly dependent. But when you start early, as soon they have dyspnea, as soon they have complaints, they will not be dependent. They will not be quickly dependent on mouthpiece ventilation. And finally, is mouthpiece ventilation possible to use with dependent patients? The answer is naturally yes, it is possible. So the conclusions on ventilation with the mouthpiece is that the indication is based on symptoms and not on blood gas, not on the CO2. We start initially with 2 hours ventilation in the middle of the day, so after lunch, for instance from 2 until 4 in the afternoon, it's a perfect moment to have a kind of bridge of resting period between the morning and the evening. In our experience, we have seen that 2 hours ventilation in the middle of the day can be used with Duchenne patients for 5 years, only 2 hours in the afternoon. It is easily and quickly implemented. Material and accessories are commercially available. You can buy them. You do not need to customize everything. You can buy material like arm support, for instance. Mouthpiece ventilation is a safe and effective solution to ventilate patients during the daytime. It's very attractive, an attractive alternative to tracheostomy. Volume cycle mode is the optimal mode without leak compensation. It's possible to offer with patients that are totally dependent, but also in children, also in patients with mental retardation, in patients with dysphagia, and in patients with a big tongue macroglossia. The limit of the use of the mouthpiece is during journeys, during infections, during medical interventions, and when there is a bulbar syndrome. Also, at night, it's not a good technique. So at night, use the nasal mask, and during the daytime, use the mouthpiece. That's it. That was the presentation. Thank you for your attention. I hope there will be questions, but I'm sure from the technicians there will be questions. We already started yesterday evening with questions, so I'm sure. It happens. In fact, it's just listening to patients, and very often when they need to change, they just phone, and we tell the mother how to change at home. But indeed, they can have need for more volume, for instance. But because initially they are managing their leaks from the beginning, what we can see is that they will take more and more the 100% of the volume with time. And by this way they can, you do not change the settings, but they change progressively the way they are using the device very often. But it's not so common that we need to change the settings, not so often.
What is the recommended volume or ideal volume?
To start you can use it. What I'm doing to make it simple, I use the same settings from night and day. For instance, someone has 500, I use 500 because he knows what 500 is, they know, and I will adapt after. But indeed, if you take 10 to 12 kilo by a kilogram, it can be a good start to set your target volume. Yeah. Because I know that very often they ask between 1 second and 1.5 second, I start very often with 1.2, 1.3, fixed time, and I will ask them, is it long enough? Do you prefer longer? I ask for every item, for the volume, for the ramp, for the ramp is the speed of the flow, for the rate, for everything I ask them. And also I try different settings. For instance, if they do not understand what is a long or short inspiratory time, I will try another one. I will set, for instance, 1 second and ask him, do you prefer? He will say, no, I prefer the previous one. The previous one was longer. So we try. We just try.
Rank or square flow pattern?
It depends on patients. I don't. I've, there is no room. But it's a good question. I have myself questions because I never know how to start. So because I do not know how to start, I prefer to avoid the square because it can be it can give the feeling that it's too aggressive initially to patients. But if they do not feel enough the insufflation of the device, they like to feel insufflated, then you can only with the ramp give this feeling that they are insufflated from the beginning. It's to try. So I would say I would start with a slow ramp, and if they ask a square ramp, I will let them try. Yes, and what is the question?
If patients are swallowing air that goes into stomach and not into the lungs, it is the issue or not? Because on an IV sometimes it is an issue when you use higher pressures. So
yeah.
Patients have these problems with
We have that very few with mouthpiece. But if it's the case, just try a little bit less tidal volume. But we, as you have, we have many patients with this problem at night time, and sometimes after years and years and years. So for instance, to give you an example, we had last week a patient, Sandy, and he's a 43 years age Duchenne patient. He started ventilation when he was 18, and he only uses nasal mask at night and mouthpiece during the daytime. He never complained about air in the stomach, aerophagia. Never. But the last 6 months, he has this problem. So we had to reduce a little bit the pressures with him. And it's very challenging, very, very challenging. But he has, at the same time, no problem with mouthpiece ventilation. No problem of air in the stomach. It's only at night, but it can be a big issue, as you said. No, I didn't. But perhaps you know the name of Dr. Ogna from Switzerland. He made the last publication on mouthpiece ventilation. So he tried, I think, 6 different devices, only with the volume cycle mode. And he looked at what is the machine doing with a fixed volume. And he could see that there was a large variation in the volume, even in the volume control mode. And he tried the pressure mode, and he said we stopped immediately because it was so easy with the volume control. So we did not. We did not.
Chtějí používat mouthpiece. protože lékaři řekli, že pacientka nepotřebuje trachelostomii. A jestli mají nějaké zkušenosti?
I will speak slowly because you must translate again. I would say I'm not John Back. John Back is a very, perhaps you know him. It's the pulse of the mouthpiece ventilation in the USA, and he's very aggressive in what he's doing. So he can on the same day put off the tracheostomy and start with mouthpiece. So when we have the planning to go from invasive to non-invasive, I think the best choice is first to go to the nasal mask to see if the upper airways can support to have air in this area. If so, then you must work for weeks, sometimes for months, with the nasal mask, but holding the tracheostomy, but just close it with a stop. Just close it, and to be ventilated with nasal mask. If it works, then you can imagine to put off the tracheostomy and to shut it, and after to try the mouthpiece ventilation for the daytime. But the idea is not to put off the tracheostomy and to start with the mouthpiece. I think there is an intermediate step, which is to use the nasal mask first. I think so. In fact, the big difficulty to go from tracheostomy to non-invasive techniques is the amount of secretions in patients having severe dysphagia. So if you need to have 6 hours a day cuff assistance because you have many, many secretions, perhaps it's easier to hold the tracheostomy just for suctioning. I mean, therefore, the tracheostomy is not a system for ventilation so far. It's more a system for suctioning. So for the last 15 years, we never place the tracheostomy to ventilate, but only to have an access for the suction catheter. Except for the very little children, this is another discussion, totally different discussion. With type 1 SMA, etc., it's a totally different discussion. But for adults, the need for a tracheostomy is more related to the management of secretions.